Hey, look at that beautiful face. Think you're on mute, man.
Technology.
Classic, you're on mute.
Moves, new novice amateur moves.
How's it
What's
going?
happening? Oh, good, and you?
You're lekker, man. Yeah, I'm really, really good. I've got some cool stuff to share with us today, some cool news. And we have a special guest joining.
I heard.
So
Hey, I'm
yeah,
excited about that.
Mr. Tyne from IncrediPig. So he's probably gonna join in the next couple of minutes or so. Looking forward to that. And
Nice.
yeah, and if there's anybody out there, if there's anybody who's got any specific questions. Now is the time to drop those questions. Maybe we can help with something. If it's got to do with e-commerce, got to do with marketing, just drop a comment, drop your question, and we'll try our best to answer it for you. Hopefully, there's a bit of value. So I see Sam in the back looks hard at work there. So that's good
You
to see.
know, those creators don't make themselves.
Exactly. But yeah, nice to have everybody here. And from my side, my name is Yandre, and I'm sitting with Gilbert, our general manager. And we're just going to talk about a little bit about what's been happening in the week of e-commerce. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I'm going to share our first article here that I'm going to bring up for us. That's pretty cool. And we're going to talk about AI and how AI is playing a role when it comes to scaling. There's a lot of businesses with a lot of different products, and artificial intelligence can essentially make managing all of that a lot easier. So I see we've got a couple of questions coming in. I'm looking forward to replying to those. So if you do have questions, drop them in the chats along for us. We'll be unpacking an article or two, and then we'll get to it in a second. Right, so this article from Tech Asia or Tech in Asia, this startup puts AI in vogue with its computer-generated models. Now, Gil, I don't know if you've had a look at this, but what was interesting here was that they actually are using AI to dress up models. So as a fashion e-commerce store, you have a lot of different products. And if you are perhaps someone who's got a massive retailer, or you're a big fashion brand, big fashion firm, for example, as Shein, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Shein,
Sheen.
they're launching 1,000 items per day, making it an obstacle for them to successfully hire models, conduct product shoots, and product images. The added cost of these processes also makes image creation difficult for smaller companies to afford. So if, obviously, it's photo shoots cost a ton of money, right? If you want to do it properly. So this is why AI is so cool, because what's happening is its software uses machine learning framework called generative adversarial network that allows users to choose the skin color, height, pose, face, and body shape for the digital mannequin. The software only requires a photo of a garment to be uploaded, and the rest will be completed automatically. So what's actually happening here is that they are dressing up models, basically presenting their clothes without having to do photo shoots, and they can do this at scale overnight, which is pretty dope. So the logistical nightmare and the cost intensive nightmare that obviously comes with doing photo shoots and doing creatives and all that kind of stuff, is obviously what keeps founders up at night. And this is AI tool can help you lift, a little bit of the load. And basically can go in and dress up these models. So you can basically just choose how you want your mannequin to look, and then you can dress it up with a bunch of stuff, and AI will take care of the rest for you. How crazy is that?
Did such a way to save costs, but also a way, obviously, to really scale, right? The fact that is especially with brands like Shein, Fashion Novas, all these big brands pushing out constant content with models. If you have a look at it, it's like all different models. I can just imagine how much they're going to be saving on stuff like this. It is kind of scary as well, because I think a lot of people are going to lose their jobs because now they have to all kind of get new side hustles, unfortunately, you models. But it's actually really cool that, you know, AI is actually at this level where it's even doing that. I know AI already generates ads anyways. Like, there's ads that...
Yeah, I mean, there's that tool called Product Hunt. Yeah, or Product exactly. ROI Hunter. ROI Hunter is the actual tool.
ROI Hunter, yeah. And I know in Adweek one time, I think it was a couple of years ago, they were literally saying, oh, you know, the display billboards, when you walk past them, because those advertisements of different brands, and those even on the streets, those are actually created by AI, and people don't even realize that those are actually AI generated. And I'm just saying, like, it's crazy to think that that's actually where we are, and this is how good this stuff is really getting. I think at the end of the day, saving costs, scaling. If you need to pump things out at scale, you're definitely going the AI route. I think that's where things are gonna go.
100%, man. And I want to use this opportunity to introduce Tyne Potritter. Nice to see you, bud. And you haven't met Gilbert, so I'm going to use this opportunity to introduce you to Gilbert, our general manager, as well. For those of you that don't know, Tyne is the founder of Incredipig and basically launched the business, bootstrapping the business, if I'm not mistaken. Basically started with, you know, a couple of pigs and an online Shopify store, and kind of like scaled it into, you know, probably one of the coolest brands in the space. Like, I mean, you've completely revolutionized the peg space, and you can tell us a little bit more about that. But yeah, welcome to the show, man. So this is one of the most professional and most coordinated shows that you've ever been on, trust me. No, I'm joking. we just hang back and you know, talk a little bit about what's been happening in the space. So welcome on the show, and I think there's a lot of people who's going to get a lot of value out of listening to your journey today.
Awesome. It's good to be here, guys.
Wonderful, man. So we've actually been talking about this article that we found. This startup puts AI in vogue with its computer-generated model. So what the software does, it basically generates images for you with the clothes. So basically, if you've got a ton of products, fashion products, you can basically choose how you want your mannequin to look. And the AI will actually create kind of like an image or a creative for you based dressing the mannequin up. So as opposed to you having to spend a ton of money on photo shoots and a ton of money on, you know, a bunch of different softwares to create those creatives, you know, you can have AI take a lot of the workload off of it for you and help you save a ton of cost as well. And you can scale products in this way, because if you have a new winter range coming out, if you've got 100 products, you know, you need to go hire models, you need to get a photo shoot done, you need to do the creatives and touch it up and da 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 da. And you can obviously still do that, but this obviously, you know, creates an element of convenience. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, AI in general, I think if we just take it back to something more close to home, the Facebook Pixel, I mean, you can't compete with it. AI does it best. And this is where it's going, I feel. AI's got a very big role to play in the future, and this is just something awesome, cutting edge to cut down costs. And like we were saying earlier, ultimately take out something that was more expensive where models were getting paid this and that, and just helping you sit at home on your computer and bring about a completely something that would take you days to do. It's absolutely amazing if you think about it.
Yeah, man, I love it. Like, I think in essence, it all comes down to efficiency and saving costs. And I mean, I started my very first business, Fitness 101, with R1,000 worth of Facebook ads, and you had to bootstrap that, right? Like, as a small business owner, one, you don't have the knowledge of scaling a business, so you waste a lot of money just doing random stuff that you shouldn't be doing or don't know any better. So there's that. And then two, the little bit of money you have, you want to make sure that you make the biggest impact with it. So in essence, I don't know what the cost of the software will be. It could be outrageous, but it will make sense for bigger brands. And at some point, it's going to become cheaper. Like, as the more it becomes commercialized, the cheaper it will get. I see Talitha says here, is drop shipping something to consider? I mean, that's a very broad question. You know, is crypto something to consider? Is wealth management funds something to consider? If you essentially want to start a business, you know, it is definitely something to consider, but there's so much more that, that goes into it. It depends on what you're trying to achieve, what resources you have. That is still a very, in my opinion, guys, I don't know what you think, but it's still a very lucrative space. But I think it's reached its peak in some way, shape, or form. And the people who are only succeeding now are the people who truly understand the mechanics of what makes dropshipping work. And that's finding the right product and scanning that product to the moon. But as cost per acquisition costs are rising, the cost of acquisition is obviously rising through paid ads. It becomes tougher and tougher and tougher to really get that winning product right. And if you do get it right, it's only for a limited time before competitors come in and eat at your margins. I mean, it's just, I wouldn't want to start. I mean, I have not started a dropshipping business, and I know there's a lot of people that make a lot of money from it. It just seems a little bit stressful, if you ask me. I don't know what you think, Ty.
Okay, so I mean, I think a good way to look at it is on the topic of Shein we were speaking about earlier. That is largely a dropshipping company. You know, a lot of people don't know that, but Shein dropships, I think it's like 60% of their products or something. They don't actually see the stock. The likes of Apple, before they actually bring a product in, they dropship it for 2 months before they see, okay, this is a product that we can build a brand, or we can make a product. We can bring it into our range and bring it into our brand. So, you know, personally, I've got friends moving hundreds of thousands of dollars a month dropshipping. But at the same time, where they really start making their money is when they white label, when they take that product and make it their own and hold the product on hand and actually become a fully operable e-commerce business.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. 100%. And I think, yeah, I think the appeal with dropshipping is, you know, like you were highlighting, they don't own the product. It's not there. It's not sitting in some warehouse, you know. And I think that that appeals to a lot of people most, because they know they don't have to always have to hold this product in stock. But I honestly also personally think it's just intense research of the market, intense research of products that move. And you really need to have your finger on the pulse of what products are selling right now and are hot, and that you're able to actually market those, you know, as quickly as possible, as best as possible. But I also think that, again, it's like, it's a very moving, quick industry. You know, one thing is trending now, next it moves, and then there's another thing trending. And if you don't have your finger on the pulse, you're probably not going to be as successful. And it requires that you are really just paying attention to how the markets are moving and constantly moving with that market. And if you're, you know, you can take all that in and manage it, then hey, by all means, look at doing that sort of marketing. But I think if you also want to build a brand, yeah, and you want to have a product behind it, and then you want to build a brand and long-term game, then ideally brand building and going that route is probably can be a little bit more profitable as well down the line, if you will.
Look, I think at the end of the day, the days of you automating your dropshipping business is probably going to be, you know, it's long gone. I think it's a matter of you need to run it like a full-time business. A lot of people in the back in the day did a little bit of a side hustle, and before they knew it, they were making $20,000-$30,000, you know, a month just dropshipping products, getting home at 6 and then spending 1 or 2 hours on it, maybe an hour on it every night. And I think that essentially is falling away, and it's turning into, you know, a full-time business. And I think the people who do treat it as a full-time business will be the people who will succeed. I see Talitha mentioned, SA market availability now where near, it's nowhere basically near the US and the UK. Standard suppliers have warehouses ready, no direct import required in those markets. Like, I do think logistics is not where it needs to be for SA markets to really fully capitalize on the opportunity. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. But I do think there are a lot of South African dropshippers, and maybe we can find some of them and bring them onto the show to talk about it, because there's a lot of people who are interested in it. But you know, it's like getting interested in crypto. It's like you do need to have some idea of what you're doing at the end of the day. So yeah, there was this article that I found talking about AI and how it's basically disrupting the space. You know, there was this article. Do you want to say something, Gil?
Yeah, I remember something about, again, on the topic of AI, because I mean, it's also in the copywriting space, right? It's not just creative at the end of the day. And I remember we had a brand that we used to work on, and I remember when they came on board, we were chatting about their advertising, and we got to the point of talking about copywriting, and they're doing really well actually at the time, you know, it was hitting like 10x ROAS, 8x ROAS on their advertising. And they're doing quite well. It's just that they wanted to partner with the agency. But long story short, we'll talk about, you know, creatives and copy. And we were like, yo, you guys are doing really well. Who's your copywriter? And he starts giggling. And he's like, yeah, copywriter. Yeah, about that. Should I show you my copywriter? I was like, no, you don't have to show me. I mean, who is it? I'm like, no, it's not a he or she. It's a thing. And Garbage. It was exactly that, yeah. And literally, like, the whole time, they've been in business for a couple of years, but they've literally been using a software tool to write their copywriting for them.
Yeah, so I mean, there's Jarvis.ai. I think it's the tool that we're using, right? And I mean, exactly. Have you experimented with that at all, Tyne, and your side? Have you tried to use it at all or not yet?
So copywriting, we've just trial and error. We look at the feedback, we split test. I've been doing it all. So interesting to hear this, because I'll definitely check it out after this. Took a little note quick.
Jarvis.ai, it's very, very cool. I've used it. Yeah. I'm very old school copywriter still. Like, for me, I've tried it. It's just not hitting the point home the way I would want to do it. But I think if it all comes down to what are you truly trying to achieve, if you're just trying to slot out as many ads as possible and you obviously don't have the time and the resources, you know, to really focus on creating granular long form copy that is going to really resonate and extract and enforce that pain point home, you know, something like Jarvis really can help you scale your business, not from a revenue perspective, but from obviously an input perspective, and output in terms of what you are going to, you know, create in terms of ads. But I tried it. I didn't really enjoy it that much. A lot of people are raving about it. I know one of my actual friends, or very well acquainted, you know, someone that I'm very well acquainted with, is working on an AI solution as well for the copywriting space, and he's actually South African. So at some point, maybe we can ask him to join us and talk a little bit about his tool, because that should be launching as well. But talking about AI, so Harlem Capital leads seeds into Because, an e-commerce enablement startup. So what this company basically does is it also allows you to make you know, changes at scale, and it kind of like personalizes the experience for you at scale, thanks to, you know, a little bit of AI as well. So with global e-commerce sales poised to be 5.5 billion industry this year, startups in the e-commerce enablement software space are looking to carve out a niche in this huge market. And this is what Because has done for themselves. If you look at Because, I'm not going to go into the article too much, but what I want to share with you guys is basically what they do. So if you actually look at their website, let me share this with you. So
the headline confused me so much when I was trying to read it.
Yeah,
I was like, what? Because this is a mathematical structure.
So basically what this company does is grows your store's revenue by putting your products, your product page content on autopilot. So we've spoken about AI dressing up your models. We've spoken about AI helping you with copy. Essentially, AI can essentially also help you personalize your pages based on where the visitors are coming from and what the visitors actually want to see. So, you know, they've got a couple of really good reviews, but what they're saying here is no more manual updates, you know, in terms of making the pages. So, you know, if you've got that retail store that's really got a bunch of products, like when you're sitting with over 100 products, maybe even 50 products or more, managing everything becomes a headache, because now you're getting a new range or something happens, or you want to discount certain products perhaps. It's a matter of really tweaking the product pages, because you can easily go and just slap a tag on it and create a discount for it, right? So you can easily go into a category and put it at a discount. But how do you at scale change the actual product page to make it more contextual to the sale and the product that people are looking at? And this is essentially where Because comes into play. So you can literally add banners to the product page. You can literally add a little bit of extra copy, perhaps. You can add a little bit of extra, I don't know, pieces of code if you need to, perhaps, as well. And you've got all these different rules and if statements. So you can, for example, say that for all my T-shirts, you know, I want to show this banner. And then on the product page for all the T-shirt section, that banner will show, plus the discount, plus this, plus that. And you can really customize it any way you want. So I haven't really dived too much into this. I see there's a demo that you can download. But for anybody who's managing over 50 different products, in order to really customize the experience for your visitors a little bit more, this could potentially be something that you can look into. And what I wasn't really, you know, too impressed with it, because there's been similar tools out there. But what I was impressed with was their case studies. They've had one or two really, really good case studies. And it's one of them was how Because brought in 6.1 million in revenue for Swedish brand tech and gear. And for those interested, they can just read these stories on how it's actually impacted their brands. And I don't think this is really, you know, at a small scale, you might not get the value out of it. So if you're a small business with a you know, less than 10,000 visits a month, 20,000 visits a month, maybe, you know, it's not really going to make that much difference. But once you're driving, you know, hundreds and thousands of visits and you've got more than 50, you know, if, when you're a Takealot, for example, and not necessarily just on that level, but maybe a little bit smaller as well. You know, it can make a little bit of a difference. And again, we usually hire resources to upload these products and to make changes to these product pages. And again, this is AI that can essentially make those improvements for you on the go and do it in a second versus, you know, 2 or 3 days worth of work when you had to hire someone to do it for you.
I see they're saying, their statement says 38% increase in cart rate.
So there's massive impacts on the add to cart rate because obviously the product page has improved. The content is now more contextual to the actual product. And essentially that increases the demand for the product in itself, if you think about it. So in essence, yeah, I mean, cool. I don't know if there's, I thought that would be a nice way to round up the AI conversation because, you know, it is very, very clear that AI is starting to play a massive role. And I wanted to actually find out from you, like in terms of AI, you know, you've got AI tools that helps you with paid ads. You've got AI tools that helps you with SEO. Is there any AI specific ads that you've been using on IncrediPig? And obviously, you know, we will be diving into your journey in a second, but any specific tools that you've used from an AI perspective that you found any value out of it, or are you a little bit more old school like myself?
So we definitely more old school. You know, the only AI we really working with would be the Pixel, is everybody in the space. And, you know, I obviously couldn't operate without it. But other than that, brick and mortar, breaking things down, everything that these programs are doing, I spend a lot of time actually doing for my store. So it's interesting to hear that because, you know, such minuscule changes in that regard make big impacts. We've seen it on our store, something that a year ago, I would say, you know, that's nonsense, man. The page is there, the product's there, people must just buy it. But it would be interesting to see what the AI picks up on having back-end data and, you know, being AI. I think it could bring some very interesting observations that human eyes wouldn't be able to potentially. So
yeah, I mean, there's certain things that we don't see, right? It's happening at the back of all of this. And we just make our own assumptions based on the data that we get. And I think, like, as you've been saying, like, there's a lot of stuff hidden from us that we don't necessarily see. And if we even had to see it, we won't understand it or make sense out of it.
Yeah, for sure. That's breaking the information down.
Exactly. Shiana. It's not Shiana. I can't remember your name. I remember calling you Shiana and you were like, no, it's not Shiana. It's Shayna. Shayna. I'm going to go with Shayna for now. Please forgive me for butchering your name if I did. She basically just asked, will this AI jewelry work or AI work for the jewelry space? Like, I don't think it's got to do with the space as much as it actually is for what you're actually just trying to achieve as a business, in my opinion. I think that is obviously fashion in terms of clothes. I'm pretty sure you can do the same with a necklace and earrings. I'm pretty sure you can. I just don't know if that specific AI tool can take care of that for you. But I'm very confident that if it's not today, at some point we're going to have a tool. Yeah, I can quickly swap a necklace on someone's neck. You're just going to have a model that stands there and that looks beautiful. And you're just going to upload your necklaces and it's just going to go just change it around her neck. Most likely. I have no doubt that that's going to be something that's either already possible or it's very possible for the future.
Probably already possible. We just haven't seen
it yet. I just don't know where to look for it. I mean, Google will probably be the best place.
Like, AI for jewelry only.
So another article I wanted to share here was the buy now, pay later. There's some stats that came out in terms of, you know, the demand for it. And, you know, especially in South Africa, in a country where the economy is, you know, pressing, where things are a little bit tough. I don't know, Tyne, I think, do you have a pay now, pay, buy now, pay later option on your store?
We do. I'm not sure if it's still up. We had problems with it about a month ago. But okay. We had something, a payments installation plan up and running.
Cool, man. Yeah, so I mean, there's Payflex that I know is one of the more popular ones. And obviously you cover the interest. So it's interest-free installments. So this is the beauty. I never really understood how it worked. I was like, how does the company make money? This was now back in the day when it just launched. I was like, this is an interesting business model. Like, how do you actually make money if you're providing interest-free payments over 3 or 4 months? And the actual company that obviously is selling the product, they're covering the difference. So in essence, you know, it's actually a great model because now the consumer is able to buy that exact product, pay it over interest-free installments. And obviously the interest that would have been on that product is now covered by the consumer. So initially it does, by the business. Now, in essence, it does chow into your margins a little bit. It depends on what kind of products you are selling. Now, if you're going to be selling products with razor thin margins, I don't know if that's probably going to be the way to go. But if you have healthy margins and you're sitting with, you know, medium to high ticket products, I do think it can make a massive, you know, impact. And we can see just globally from 2016 how, you know, the demand for it basically has improved. So we can see, you know, global was 0.4 and now it's sitting at basically 3% of payment solutions, basically. You know, Sweden 12 to 25. So 25%, basically, if I'm looking at the data correctly, you know, is basically buy now and pay later. So, yeah, and everything is just going up. So I do think it's a great business model. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on it.
I think it's going to increase for sure, especially if it benefits the consumer more than anything, actually. I think for them, it's almost like a risk reversal. And it helps them to obviously make that purchase. So I only see that increasing, to be honest, and improving in terms of those, especially when you look at those numbers. Those things are jumping, hey? 0.43%, 12 to 25. And I think we're just going to follow suit, given, like, you know, we kind of like follow suit on the international stage side of it. But I think it's definitely going to be something that we're going to keep seeing rising, to be honest.
Yeah, hundreds. Tyne, any thoughts on that?
I mean, from my personal experience, you're reminding me why I need to get it back up. every second day, you know, we'll buy at the end of the month. They WhatsApp us or they email us, like, just waiting for that paycheck. So this is a solution to that.
Big compliment. There was an article that came out, I don't know if it's in the beginning of this week, last week, where they said that regardless of your salary, most people's money are up in the first week of the month. It was an FOB stat that came out, and it basically said whether you're earning above 30k a month up into you know, a couple of hundred grand a month, at the end of the day, most people's salary, 80% of their salary is done in the first week. That's scary
as well.
Exactly.
That is very scary. And I think
buying fluctuations as well, for sure.
100%. So we need to understand that as an e-commerce business, you're not just competing with your own competitors, but you're competing technically with everybody else for what money is in that person's wallet, because whatever money is left, he's gonna think about spending. And if 80% of consumers are emotional buyers, which they are, 80 to 90% of people are emotional buyers, you need to understand that you're not just competing with your own competitor that's selling the exact same product as you, but you're competing with everybody else who is gunning for that guy's emotional bandwidth. Who's going to go, okay, cool, I've got X amount left. Am I going to buy this? Am I going to buy that? And whoever's going to be doing the best, the most convincing, is going to get the sale.
Yeah.
And when the money is up,
it's done.
You're going to have to wait for next month to, you know, essentially to try again. So that's a pretty interesting way of looking at it at the end of the day. Tyne, we've got, I mean, the show is usually just an hour or so. We've got a bit of time. You know, we can always go on longer. Like, I've got time. I don't know if you guys do, but, you know, I want to chat a little bit about IncrediBig, the success that you guys have had so far, you know, where you started and kind of like what you've done to get it to where you are now. I think there's a lot of people who will resonate with your story. There's a lot of people who might be getting into it, who essentially needs a little bit of advice on what the best next steps for them are. And I think you can really make a massive difference in their lives by just sharing some perspectives. That doesn't always have to be advice, but just a perspective in itself, you know, can help someone pivot in the right direction. So, you know, without any further ado, I'd like to introduce yourself, which I have already, and IncrediPeg. For those of you that don't know, IncrediPeg line. Yeah, man, again, thanks for joining us on the show. And maybe just start a little bit with, you know, how you really came up with the idea. And I mean, thinking about it, because everybody is sitting there going, what am I going to do? What industry can I get into? What product can I sell? How can I make the product unique? And I feel like you kind of like have ticked all those boxes. You've come up with an industry that was just super boring. You got a product that really made a massive difference and kind of like was outside the box. And you really have a cool, you know, message behind the brand as well. So you kind of like ticked all those boxes. And I think that's the main reason I wanted you on the show today. So without any further ado, please dive in and give us a bit of a history lesson there, if you don't mind.
Thanks, Yandre. Contrary to popular belief, because my face is all over IncrediPeg, I'm on the ads, I'm doing the e-commerce side of things, I wasn't actually the inventor. So e-commerce is a family-run business, and my father is the man with the mind. He sees things in that way, always looking for efficiency. And, you know, this isn't his first product that he came up with. He did a product before this that was truly brilliant, ticked all the boxes as well, went through the whole procedure, ended up getting into retail. And at the end of the day, our percentage was so small, we might as well have thrown that business away, which we did. So then my dad went back at it again, got to the dinner table and was like, listen, guys, I've got the new best thing. And he explains it to us, the IncrediPeg. And once again, like you say, it ticks all the boxes. It's recycled plastic. It's cheap. It's proudly South African. It's multifunctional. It's durable. It's exciting. You know, it's new, something that hasn't changed much over the past 100 years. You look at our IncrediPeg, you won't even be able to identify it as a clothing peg. So he really did well in that regard. And we slowly got the ball rolling. And based on our initial take on my dad's first product, we learned exactly what not to do. So we took a less traditional approach, started on the markets, went out, established a brand, and eventually we ended up going online. And now this is where I started getting involved, knowing the e-commerce space, looking into it as a viable option. I was always looking for the next business idea. And then it clicked, you know, this product ticks all the boxes of a winning product. Let's go all in. And that's how we basically started moving online. I started putting time into the e-commerce space, buying courses, getting educated. And we went online, lost a lot of money initially. And then we really started making it shake and built it into the brand that it is today.
Tell me, I've got a couple of questions just on the back of that, if you don't mind. Awesome. Gilbert, do you want to go first? Because it sounds like you've got a couple too.
Not even a question. I just kept sitting there. Pigs, though. Pigs. That's genius. That is genius, man.
Before we started, clothing pigs, you know, you want to do your product research. You want to check how many searches are there on Google. Yeah. So we searched clothing peg, no matches, you know, we're checking into Google Analytics.
Should
we make this jump? 5 years later, 50,000 searches, you know, we're creating the search function on Google.
Nice, man.
Listen, I think, tell me about that first sale. Like, what did you do? Like, how did you get the first sale? Like, was it a friend or a family member? Did you run Facebook ads? Walk me through the first 10 sales.
Okay, so let's keep things in the e-commerce perspective. I do believe that's when our business really started to go in this regard. Obviously, at the markets and things like that, friends and families, that was the way it happened initially. But how it actually happened was my parents had an online store. We set it up for them very generally. And, you know, they were very reluctant about the online space. Anyway, we put some time and effort in. My mother was doing amazing on the content side of things. And we were making slow organic sales online. Eventually started putting ads, nothing hectic, like 100, 200 grand a day. And we started making sales. What actually started it, though, and how my journey got started in the business is I spoke to my parents. Now I'm feeling informed. I've just studied the whole e-commerce thing. And I'm like, listen, guys, this product can do 6 figures a month. And they're like, no way. It's like, you're smoking your socks. It's a clothing peg. We're in South Africa, this, that, that. They won't let me touch the store. They won't let me touch the store in the way I'd like to touch the store. Yeah, so long story short, I'm like, well, let me start up my store, a side store. I'll buy the product from you, essentially a drop shipping model. And you're making money, I'm making money, everyone's happy. So they're like, okay, you know, cool. He's my son. Let him play around, you know, let him have some fun. Month and a half goes by, I invest my entire holiday savings into it. I haven't made any sales. I made like 2 sales within the month. I'm like, shit, this isn't going as I thought. Adjusting, adapting and moving forward. Eventually, a month and a half in, I had my first 10K day off the bat. And from then, it just started mooning. I started learning more, adjusting more aggressively. And very shortly after that, I hopped into the main page. We dropped the side page and we started working on the main page, which had a lot more data, a lot more space to work with. And that's how it started, really. Started losing a lot of money, I guess.
Well, I suppose it's what everybody does at some point. Like, no business just starts. I mean, the amount of businesses that just randomly start from nothing and start seeing profit on day one and continuously linearly sees profit all the time is probably 0.01%, right? But from what I understand, obviously you guys invested a lot of money in Facebook ads, or at least some money on Facebook ads daily. And you actually mentioned that this could be, you know, a 6-7 figure store. And, you know, to think that pegs can actually do that, it's I think there was you shared a screenshot on Instagram stories. And when I looked at the growth of the store and the revenue you were doing, and I saw you were selling pegs, it completely blew my mind. But what you have done, though, and we can touch on this in a second, and I don't want to digress too much, is that I see that you guys have bundled it. So you're not selling it as individual pegs, obviously. You know that average order value is crucial, and you know that you need to get as much back from the user once you've invested that money, or the customer once you've invested that money into ads. So you guys have actually bundled the products, and I think, is that contributing to a lot of the success, or what is your perspective on that?
So that's literally everything, you know, at the bottom, at the end of the day, after you've got your winning product, it's a numbers game. And the numbers, the bottom line is what matters most. So if you're going to take into account all your costs associated with the online realm, such as advertising, this, that, that, you've got to, at the end of the day, make a profit. And if we were selling an individual packet, 60 units for 75 Rand, there's just no viable option for us to make money off of that. So right now we've got a bottom product going for 235 Rand free delivery, which is not sustainable in terms of our profit margin.
Sure.
We have an upsell that offers such an immense upgrade in value that our average order value is 320 to 350 Rand. So we rely heavily on that bundling of the products. And then interestingly enough, that bundling brings a byproduct or some side value to the table, in that every second customer, you know, we speak to, where did you hear us, hear from us about it? It's like, no, I got gifted these pegs. Because I've got four packets of pegs. What am I going to do with one? Humans are givers, you know. Here comes Sherilyn, and you give a packet of pegs to her. And there's an organic way of extending the marketing of your business. So, yeah, very, very central to our business model. We can't do it without it. And I think that's very central to just about any product, you know. Buy one, buy two, 25% off. You want to upsell it, of course, as you know.
100%. I've got a couple other questions that we're going to get to Karen. So basically, and if you guys have any questions, please drop it in the comments. We'll get to it. We're going to try and get to everybody if that's going to be possible. It should be. So if there's a question, anything got to do with marketing, e-commerce, anything specifically for Tyne from AcritiPeg, drop a comment and we'll get to it. So Karen basically said, hey guys, so what's your dad's first product and what advice do you have for using independent distributors?
Okay, so my dad's first product, yes, I would love to show you it. It was basically, you know, you've got a wall hanger, you hang your pictures on it. Now, that's a fixed little knob of plastic. And a problem associated with that is, okay, you're hanging multiple pictures or you're hanging a picture and it's not in the position that you want it to be. It's 1 centimeter too short, 1 centimeter too high. It's not lining up nicely. Very common problem. So what my dad did the one day was looking at the cable tire. He said, well, what's stopping us from making an adjustable picture hanger? So the cable tire function, if you imagine the knob that goes in, that can go up, but it can't go down. He did that and he put the knob of the picture hook at the bottom of that. So now if this one's 1 centimeter too short, 5 clicks up, but the best of it is now you brought an improvement to the product and it's cheaper than the initial product, which is the same thing he did with IncrediPay in essence. So that's the initial product. I'll be right back.
Your dad sounds like a real innovator and a creator there, man.
He should have been an engineer.
Like the Steve Wozniak and the Steve Jobs, yeah. That's basically what it is.
And then this is the clothing peg, for those of you who don't know it. Very simple design.
Okay.
No labor in it. And this thing just doesn't break. Recycled plastic as well. So as for independent distributors, I think it's a largely overlooked opportunity in South Africa. Mm-hmm. You know, where I started in terms of my business hustle was independently from IncrediPeg now was on the markets. Every week we've got the Buddha Mark, we've got Rosebank Market, we've got all of these markets where thousands of people are coming in a buying mood. And to get on those markets is a gold mine. So in terms of independent distribution, I say set up a business structure where you're the supplier of your product to people who are taking whatever they're taking at the end of the day, whether you do it on fixed cost or a commission basis always works best. That's the best way to go about it because it's going to cost you nothing and you're going to grow with everyone else growing. You know, if I'm paying John 20% or I'm charging John R5 for my product and he's selling it for 60, he's going to make sure he sells 150 products and, you know, the money comes back to you at the end of the day. So I'd say look into the markets. It's a big one, a lot of opportunity there, very cheap. And
yo, distributors are great. I think technically you will become a wholesaler in some way, shape, or form, right? It's making sure the margins actually check out as well for them. So you need margins for yourself. You need margins for them.
Yes.
And if the margins are not going to be good for them or good enough for them, they're not going to put the time and effort into it. So it's really incentivizing through margin. And I remember like my experience in retail wholesale online was purely because of a company that I worked at. And then, you know, we were doing about 100 million a year. And a lot of that, 30% of that was wholesale, 60% of that was retail, and 10% of that was online. And obviously online kept growing, but it's so important to focus on all aspects. You know, if you do have a wholesale division and an online division, both divisions need equal amount of attention to make it work. And it's not just about giving people you know, the product and letting them run. It's really coming up with deals for them, bundle offers, deals, healthy margins, incentives, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, man, that's awesome. Awesome to hear. So we've got a question saying, with IncrediPeg, how long did you manage all aspects of the business on your own, photography, social media, marketing, e-commerce, or did you hire people to assist with this from the get go?
Okay, so that's a great question. You know, when to keep things in-house and when to outsource is a huge problem because you want to keep your costs as low as possible. You know, with e-commerce being like any other business, there's huge fluctuations and every month's not a gold mine. So luckily, like I said, we were a family business. So how we divide the labor is my dad he controls retail, wholesale, things like that, which often come from our advertising and things like that. Whereas my mother actually does the content. I couldn't imagine. She gets hundreds of comments every day. She posts twice a day some days. That's what she does. She runs that and the workshop. So luckily, the only thing I actually had to keep on top of was the e-commerce, the actual bringing in of sales. And I feel as if that's best because, you know, when things get busy, I often find myself in the workshop hands-on, putting in the hours. But what you don't tend to realize in the moment is your time is often best spent focusing on what you know. So instead of me trying to do the content and trying to do all of these things, if it's impeding on me focusing on growing the business, focusing on the net margin at the end of the day, which is what I do with the ads and the e-commerce side of things, it's not worth it because you need to stay focused. So to answer your question, if you're independently running this business, I guess the best way to look at it would be is how much can you take on? Are you at a point where you feel like the workload is too intense? Are certain things that you deem important taking the back seat? How's your mental health looking? If all of these things are indicating that you need someone on board, do it. You know, get someone on board if you can do it with profits. But at the end of the day, you know, we put in a lot of time and we still put in a lot of time keeping things compact, small. We've only got 7 staff right now. And, you know, we're running huge volume. But rather upgrade as it allows you than jumping deep. So, you know, you don't want to burn yourself out. Very important. You want to have enough time to focus on what you need to focus on. And importantly as well, you want to have the skills. Because now let's look at e-commerce specifically. You can't do e-commerce if you don't know what e-commerce is in the full picture of things. So you want to put a ton of time into that and know you can do it properly, because often, you know, you could pay a digital marketing firm and they're going to bring better results than you, even though it's costing you money. So a few things, you know, if you have the specialities, it comes down to time and effort and where you want to focus. If you don't, it's a smart idea to outsource. But luckily, we had a small team together from the outset, which allowed us to do just about everything in-house.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, even hiring someone, whether it's internally or outsourcing to an agency, doesn't guarantee results. You know, I think often you hire someone in-house thinking it's going to make a massive difference, and you realize it's not the right person you've hired. They actually just don't get it as much as you thought they would. They're just not adapting to the environment the way they thought they would. And you actually end up wasting your money. And I think as understanding, you know, that risk is crucial, and doing your due diligence before you just go out and hiring someone. Like, even ourselves, like, we're not miracle workers. That's why we're only work with a very, very, you know, selected handful of type of clients, because we know what risk there is for a business owner. We're empathetic to that. We understand that. We really do. And I think that's super, super crucial. So do your research, whether it's internal staff members, whether it's outsourcing to consultants or whatever it is. You want to make sure that you're backing the right people. Yeah, man. And I think in terms of one of the other questions I had, and I know you've mentioned that Facebook has played a crucial role in the growth of the business. So tell us a little bit about Facebook. My question to you is, you know, did you actually thought when you started running Facebook ads and you didn't see those initial, you know, the initial maybe traction that you've wanted, did you really think that it's going to be such a powerful platform, or, you know, did you just not really know where else to go? You know, I mean, where else do you go if it's not Facebook or Google? Was it just one of those things where it was like, well, I don't know where else to go. I'm just going to give this Facebook thing a try and then see what works. And when you did, you know, didn't see the results that you want, how did you adapt? Because a lot of people don't see the results they want on Facebook in the first month or two or three. You know, how did you navigate that?
Okay. So, I mean, getting traction for sales-wise online was probably the biggest impediment, the biggest challenge of my entire e-commerce career. Contextually, you know, you're going into this online realm with minimal experience, no experience, minimal knowledge from what you've taken from bits and drabs from everybody, your courses, your mentors and things like this. And now you're actually going to do it. And what proves itself to be true is the practical side is very different to the theoretical side. You know, you think you've got things down, and that's just not the case. So, like I said, when I hopped onto Facebook initially, it was a train smash. I mean, I lost tens of thousands of rands with minimal return. You know, there's definitely a lot of excitement with the ka-ching coming in every now and then. But long story short, I was losing money. And what kept me going was the potential I saw. You know, from the people I learned from, I saw what they were doing, and I knew someone personally in the space, and I was like, well, stick to it. I understood how important data accumulation was, especially in the beginning, and let's stick it out. So I actually put I started too aggressive, but at halfway through the first month, I basically said, okay, well, let's chill out on Facebook. Let's take a step back and let's look at what the metrics are telling you. Because back then I had an idea of what the metrics were and what they were generally indicating. But, you know, that layered understanding where you go from actually knowing this statistic compared to this statistic indicates that, and this is how I should respond. That's what I really started focusing on. And another big thing apart from the metrics, I would say, is establishing a brand and social proof. You know, within South Africa, we spoke about it. There's not a lot of trust in the space. No. Yeah. And that is a huge impediment, especially so in the South African context. There's a huge misunderstanding. Everybody thinks e-commerce is booming, but in all reality, the older generations not all of them, but the majority do not have trust. Every second person's like, is this a scam? They're asking us in our emails, this, that, that. Like, where's my product? It's been a day. Yeah. So social proof and establishing a brand. Kristen commenting on your post, you know, just received my pegs 2 days ago. That social proof is so valuable. When I got that ball rolling, the initial sales really started coming in after we adjusted what the metrics were telling us.
You know, it's funny, like, when you speak to a client, I don't work with a lot of clients anymore, and you know, face to face. But I mean, Gil will tell you, like, when you initially have that initial conversation with a client, you actually try and explain social proof to them. And obviously, these are business owners, and in the e-commerce space, I don't think people really understand how powerful social proof is. So you can hear them list; they are listening. You can see that they are taking it in. But you don't see that light bulb go on to the point where they go, oh, shit, yes, we need to work on this immediately. And whether you stress that as much as you can, it's clear that that is a very underrated element of getting traction. And from what it sounds like, that is one of the big things that made a difference for you guys, if I'm correct in saying so.
Yeah, so that's where the money was going. You know, initially, it started very slow. We had no data on our pixel. We had nothing going for us. And spending the money, all that was coming back at the end of the day was social proof slowly. And what people don't tend to realize is once that social proof is there, like 20 comments, then Fricky is feeling more tempted to drop a comment. He's feeling more tempted to check out the comments, feeling more tempted to actually hop on board. And that's huge in South Africa, you know, given where we are in the e-commerce game as we speak.
That's awesome. Sorry, go for it.
Sorry, just jump in. I was going to actually say, I mean, you obviously found a turning point where the business really started, you know, bringing in those sales. How did you amplify getting reviews at that stage? Because, yeah, they were coming in organically. And obviously you can see this is actually what's working. This is actually what's informing other customers to buy from us. Is there any particular thing you guys actually did to try and amplify the reviews that you were getting on a daily or a monthly for the business?
So initially, not actually. There was no strategy in place. Came down to establishing the brand the hard way, you know, being at the markets and then people coming across us online and us going all out in the markets and, you know, giving a full demonstration, being really personal about it. It had a good patronage with our brand from the beginning. A lot of people loved us. A lot of people do love us for the effort we put into our business and for what we do broadly. And, you know, that helped us initially. But now when I started my side store, I didn't have that. I was literally just a drop shipping store, basically. So what I did was it came down to spending the bucks, you know, spend enough money till you get into the right pocket for them to start commenting. And that's what did it for me. But definitely there's confluence across, you know, the physical brand being established and the online and, you know, going all out in your ad creatives. That's something in hindsight that's massive. You want to be funny. You want to relate. You want to, and that people appreciate that. And that's how you're going to push reviews.
Nice. Okay. I like that, man.
If there's anybody else out there who's got some questions for us, please drop them in the comments. If you're watching, you're listening, Let us know if you've got a question for ourselves, for Tyne. Tyne, listening to your journey, a lot of what you're saying resonates with me in terms of, you know, not just running an agency, but any business. And e-commerce specifically, it sounds like education has played a massive role in, you know, you getting to where you guys are today. There's a lot of people out there who are not really, either don't have the time or the energy, or they're just not in the mood to really spend the time on educating themselves. It sounds like that's made a massive difference to you. What is your thoughts on buying courses, working with, you know, people in the space who can teach you what to do? What is your thoughts on that, and what impact did it have in your business?
So yeah, definitely agree with that 100%. It's probably the biggest thing about the e-commerce side is knowing what you're doing. And there's no ways you're going to learn or know what to do if you haven't been exposed to content that's going to teach you what to do. So the logical thing is to go all in actually learning. And one thing I've come to see is I've obviously got a lot of people approaching me all the time, like, listen, I've got this. I want to go online. I see your figures. Let's do this. Nobody actually understands how hard it actually was. Like, even my parents, they truly don't understand. I know my mom's in here. Hi, mom. They do not understand how much time and effort I put in. And the only way to explain it is I've been a full-time law student for the last 7 years of my life. And for the last 2 years, I can confidently say I put more time into my e-commerce than I did for my actual law degree. And I was putting a lot of time into my law degree. So if you don't have the time, you need someone out there who knows what they're doing. Otherwise, you're going to go in circles. You're going to waste money. You're going to burn your fingers. And if you're going to learn, it's not about, you know, go and watch that YouTube video. Now I know what ROAS stands for and we're ready to go. It's actually, you got to study it like it's a degree and it's an ongoing thing still today. I mean, I know we speak every now and then. We are still buying courses. It's an ongoing thing. We are continuously educating ourselves in an ever-changing environment. And I do think that's the most crucial aspect of success in the e-commerce space.
100%. Nice. I agree with that. And I resonate with that. And I think I don't always, you know, throw the number out there, but we spent a fortune on mentorships last year, you know, not just for e-commerce, but also just in general for our own business consulting, learning from other entrepreneurs, different people from different industries, paying someone who's 10 steps ahead of you to paying someone who's one step ahead of you, and trying to get all the different perspectives and trying to contextualize it to your own business and then implementing it best you can. I think that is what's allowed us to grow as a business, as an agency, you know, is really investing in learning the actual processes and systems and all the things that needs to go into it. Because when we started, you know, Gilbert and I, you know, we were spinning our wheels and, you know, we really, you know, we had a good product and a good service, and we had a, you know, we did get results for clients, and, you know, but how do you scale it? How do you duplicate yourself? How do you essentially build a business, right? Not just a lifestyle business, but an actual business. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, through education and through experience, I think, you know, wisdom is only knowledge applied. So In essence, getting the knowledge is important, but then putting the effort into it to get the experience back and then to contextualize it even further and then improve on it. I think that's what's really allowed us to grow as a business to the point where we are now. And I think that's exactly the same for e-commerce and exactly the same, but for any industry, for any business, really. But for some reason, I don't think people grasp that for the e-commerce space, because you look online and you see every second guy has got a successful dropshipping business, you know, and I think it's just kind of like all of that goes just out the window. No, it's much easier than that. You know, this is the holy grail. And yeah, it's unfortunately just not true.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Cool, man. So before we head off, I've got one more question for you. I see Karen also has. So anybody else who's got some questions, drop them in the comments for us. Karen says, do you need to have a contract in place with independent distributors from day or one, even though it's on commission basis? Being a lawyer, maybe you have some, or at least, you know, having studied law, what is your perspective on that?
So contrary to popular belief, the lawyer is going to tell you that, you know, I don't believe in a strict contract approach to things. you know, depending on the situation, if you're going to have completely random, non-associated people there, you know, you might want to have a simple write-up just saying, okay, this is the deal, which, you know, would be a contract by definition. However, you need to realize from the legal side of things is the problem only comes in with contracts once the contract is breached. And it's a massive pain in the butt to try and rectify anything that someone wants to breach. So I would say a better system to do it is to vet people you know or friends of friends and ride that wave, because you're always going to know someone somewhere. And if you don't have that venture, that opportunity, then, you know, just put a simple contract in place. At the end of the day, the problem's only really going to come in once they breach it. So you want to vet them as much as possible to ensure that they're not going to mess you over. But in our experience, you know, we haven't had any problems. People are very grateful. The products we give them make them more money than anything else. So it's not like they want to screw us over. So to have a healthy relationship is an important thing, I think. But John, if you need a contract, you need a contract.
I think it boils down to, you know, just having a bit of a structure and a clear level of understanding of what is happening right now. We're going to give you X, you're going to do Y, and essentially this is the goal between both of us. I think it just boils down to having some level of expectation on both ends of what am I responsible for? What are you responsible for? Do you understand that? And, you know, are you happy to proceed? I don't know if that's what I'm hearing you say, basically.
No, for sure. Exactly that. Short and
sweet. Cool, man. So last question, just for anybody listening and watching, I'm pretty sure this will help them just, and I know this is so difficult. I hate these kind of questions because you can't just narrow it down to maybe three things, for example. But, you know, three things that you would suggest someone really pays attention to when they're starting out, when it comes to, you know, this initial phase of going between, I would say, $5,000 a month to, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 a month, because that's most likely where most people are stuck. You know, they've got some friends from friends buying from them. They've got some organic traffic coming in. And I actually got one of those emails, you know, this week. I get a couple of them a week. But one specific one is resonating with me right now, where the guy is just, you know, Muda Lewis, essentially. And he's at a point where, you know, he's spent a lot of time and effort into creating a product, and it's something he loves and passionate about, but it's just not living up to the expectations that he had. And when I looked at the store and the product was really good, you know, he's ticked a lot of the boxes. But at the end of the day, it's just not getting to where he needs to be. So in essence, and again, I know it's difficult to narrow it down, but, and this is why I maybe don't provide advice, just a perspective perhaps on from your experience, three things that you think they need to really put attention to, between going from, you know, your initial 5K to 50 to 100K.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of topics we inevitably rolled into in the conversation, but I guess I'll just reiterate it and put it down a bit more clearly. But like you say, you know, to if in hindsight I was looking at my initial experience, I would rant on for hours because there were so many things that I completely missed the ballpark with. But to keep it general, I think one of the most important things, funny enough, which is not spoken enough about, is to have realistic expectations. So with the amount of misinformation out there nowadays, I've seen a ton of people, I'm sure you even more, enter the space with this get rich quick mentality, where in actual fact, it's really not the case, you know. And at the end of the day, having unrealistic expectations will have you dropping out of the space before the show really gets started. You know, personally, as I said, if I dropped out in that first month and a half where I was losing tens of thousands, which was extremely demotivating given it was my actual holiday money, I wouldn't have had the close to seven-figure month that next month. And it's those realistic expectations as it pertains to data accumulation, establishing a brand with social proof, and ultimately giving your time to learn from your mistakes, that actually keeps you in the game long enough to make it shake, if I could put it like that. Then, sorry?
No. Please continue. I'll add my comments at the end, yeah.
Okay, then secondly, again, we touched on this, but I think it's all too important. And that's putting in time before to get well informed before you actually hop into the space. So the knowledge you need to make it shake in e-commerce is available online. And what the traditional person is going to take this statement to mean is to actually go and watch a YouTube video, to take some notes, and boom, you're an e-commerce entrepreneur. That's highly not the case. Like I said, you know, I invested more time than my actual law degree in the last 2 years into getting informed. And it's that information which ultimately got me to where I am. So to get that going knowledge-wise, it takes nothing but discipline, desire, and clocking in the hours. But funny enough, if you were to look at it, I confidently submit that most people do not have what it takes to actually do this, however simple that formula may seem. So if you can't invest the time, the next best option is to get someone who has invested the time, or someone who you can work with who can invest the time. Because that part of the business, without decent knowledge in the space, you go in nowhere. So I think that's a very important one as well. And then lastly, I think I would say have a solid business model and business plan in place. So e-commerce, as we all know, is unlike any other business out there today, in that the entry barriers are lower than ever, and scaling opportunity could quite literally take you from 6 to 7 figures within a period of a month. And, you know, this has also got that get rich quick scheme mentality in the space. But at the same time, you know, this has made putting in the extra time in the pre-launch stage more critical than ever. You know, from the outset, certain products are perfect for the online realm, whereas other products will be a complete flop. You've got to know what your product is, how your product will perform online, which connects to point two that I mentioned above. And I mean, at the end of the day, if you're looking to move 6 to 7 figures at a month, your product needs to be a winner. And nothing you do otherwise can create a winning product. If it does not, like if you don't have the features of a product that's going to be successful online, then over and above that, as for the business model side of things, you want to have things in place. What I mean by that, you know, once the heat comes to the table, what e-commerce can bring, you actually want to be able to fulfill the orders. You actually want to have a working business model in place. You can't be delaying your deliveries by 2 weeks, things like this. Again, this is something we most definitely learned the hard way. We got taxed tremendously due to the lack of preparation in that regard. And luckily, you know, we started booming in the COVID period, so there were a lot of excuses to ride. But it wouldn't be so forgiving if we were to do it again. So those would be my three general things that, you know, you'd want to get down apart from, you know, everything else we spoke about.
No, awesome, man. Thank you for that. I've got one more question I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind. But before I do, I want to give Gil the opportunity to ask maybe one more question. Gil, do you have anything for today?
Yeah, no, sure, man. I think amazing business. Congrats on the success. I think for me, in the back of my mind when you're speaking, and I was itching to ask, like, at what point did it, you know, how long did it take before you actually started seeing, you know, some profit within the business coming in nicely, after all the hustle, the hind, you know, the grind and losing so much money? How long did it actually take for you to, you know, reach that point where you're like, okay, cool, we're actually making some profit here? I wanted to know how long that was, really.
Okay, so I'll say all in all, you know, I'm a very planned person, and I put in a lot of preparation beforehand. So if you were to include that, I'd put an extra 3 months on top of it, because that definitely contributed to the success. But a solid, in that case, 5 months before we started seeing things. But then again, once it started moving, it moved like nothing I've ever seen before. Like, the potential that e-commerce has, people struggle to grasp. Like that month, for example, that's 4 months in from when I started my store, we had a month at Incredipeg where we moved 6,000 products, 6,000 orders, which is absolutely insane. And that's different depending on what you're doing, obviously. Us, we were a lucky 3 months. I would say more realistically to get where we are now, because obviously that was pre, actually, let me take a step back. Uh-huh. That was pre-iOS. that month was a holy grail. Like we smashed it next level. Uh-huh. Next month, the Facebook apocalypse comes. So we go from here to like backwards 10 steps. Then the whole of last 2 years ago, when was it?
The update was last year, February. That's when it started. February and April.
Yes, January was the miracle month. Last year, February, it's back to the drawing board. So we went back, and that took me another maybe 8. It's ongoing, but I'm only starting to get it back up there at scale again now in the new environment. So there's no easy answer to that. It's ongoing, you never know when it's going to come. Some people do it on the first day. Some people do it in the first year. But as long as you're making something or breaking even along the way, you are building a brand which is going to bring benefit to the table.
I think the better question is, how long did it take you to feel like you're actually running a legitimate business?
Yeah.
Like, this is not a
this ain't paying you bills right now.
This has got the opportunity to be an actual business that, you know, you can establish and grow. And I think that's really what it comes down to from our side. And I think, you know, a lot of people take their life savings invested, and they either go too quickly, too fast, and they just don't have the right structure, and therefore they burn it quickly. Or what they do is they take, you know, it's essentially that matter of, you know, they're not doing due diligence, like you said, and just making sure, do you have the right product? Do you have the right industry? Is this really what you need to be doing? Speak to a couple of people in the space first, you know, talk to an agency, just fish out what they're saying. And I think, you know, we've got over 100 calls a month of people who want to work with us, but we only sign 3-4 clients, you know, that's an ideal fit for us, because there's no way of us really contributing in terms of value for a business who's not ready to work with an agency, because we understand the cost and all the other things that goes into it. And I think a lot of people don't. They just look at an agency, or they look at an opportunity to outsource, you know, something, and make that life easier for themselves. Like, you guys worry about that. And sometimes your business is just not where it needs to be in order to benefit from that. And I think with that said, it goes for everything in your business. But yeah, from my side, I think I wanted to ask you, because your shop's on Shopify, and there's a lot of Shopify users out there who's listening and watching to this. So my question was, one Shopify app that you think you highly recommend, you know, regardless of the industry that you're in, that's really going to help you make a difference. So I didn't want you to prepare for this, because I wanted to be an intuitive kind of like prompt response in terms of what you think. Obviously, you are welcome to think about it if you need to, but I didn't want you to do, you know, too much thinking behind it. So one Shopify app that you think every store basically needs, if it's not a specific name of an app, just what type of app do you think every store needs?
Well, I think that's pretty easy if we're going to look at it from an early general to relate to the listener. I think one of the best apps you could have is Klaviyo or Omnisend, anything email based. And importantly with that is an email capture system. Money is left on the table by every second e-commerce entrepreneur in South Africa. To have aggressive follow-ups via your emails, even WhatsApp, it's just going to make you money at the end of the day. Over and above that, building an email list, it's traffic that you own at the end of the day. And you can really leverage that to make, you know, we send out one email a month to 6,000 people, and it makes heavy five figures every time. Now, people don't realize the value with traffic that you own. So I'd say from the outset, the earlier the better. You want to have Klaviyo or Omnisend or any other email provider up and running, and you want to know how to work that channel.
Awesome, man. Listen, I really enjoyed the conversation with you. Thank you so much for joining us today. You are welcome anytime. Whenever you've got time, whenever you've got capacity, I do want to touch on TikTok, because I know you've been experimenting in the space. There's a lot of people who've got a lot of questions around TikTok. So if you ever want to jump on and have that discussion, that'll be amazing. But in the meantime, everybody who was listening or watching, Thank you so much for your attention. This is Tyne from Incredipig. Have a look at his business, take some notes. We hope that you have a great rest of your Friday and enjoy the weekend. And Tyne, thanks again for watching us. Gilbert, thank you for your time. And all the best, guys. Thank you and goodbye.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Thanks, Tyne. Great meeting you, man.
Thanks, Gilbert. Also, nice meeting you.